On the field, in the broadcast booth, Ron Johnson is Minnesota sports. One-of-a-kind opinions, big-name guests, the teams you care about every day. It's the Ron Johnson Show, part of Locked On Sports Minnesota, and it starts now.
Welcome to the Ron Johnson Show, and I'm your host, Ron Johnson. On today's episode, I'm excited. We got ESPN Insider, Vikings Insider, Kevin Seifert. We're going to throw the hard-hitting questions at him. Yes, Courtney Cronin has moved on to the Bears, unfortunately. But, hey, we got Kevin Seifert. So he's going to come in and maybe drop some knowledge on Sam about Kirk Cousins that Sam doesn't believe. But also, we're gonna break down the NFC North. We're going to talk about the receivers in the NFC North. We might go position by position as the rest of the summer goes on. Just looking at the NFC North, because we know if you win the North, you have a chance to be really – you know, positioned pretty well in the playoffs. You look at where the Packers have finished when they finish. You look at where the Vikings finish when they finish first. Winning the NFC North is kind of the key, but you have to do it in dominant fashion. You can't backpedal your way into the playoffs as NFC North champions. You kind of got to start off on a high hitch. So we're going to start off with the position that we think is the most important. But also, we got the Daily Three as we come up later. But before we jump into all that, and we talk about the Vikings receiver core versus the Bears receivers versus the Lions, I guess they can call them receivers, and then the Packers receivers without Devontae Adams. Who ranks number one? Who ranks number four? And is that gap so big that one team is head and shoulders above the rest? Before we jump into that, we're going to bring Sam Extraman. We have a word from our sponsors.
Yes, we do. It's Blue Nile and BlueNile.com. You know, a lot of guys have been in the position where they got to walk into one of those ring stores, whether it's in the mall, whether it's this big, you know, open warehouse floor, and they've got to talk to people about rings. They don't know really what they're talking about. They're a little bit uncomfortable. I've got a great tool for you. It's BlueNile.com, where from the comfort of your own computer, you can choose diamond shape, size, clarity. You don't have to talk to any pushy salespeople. And you can find sparkling, wonderful jewelry if you're going to pop the question or just for any other fine occasion. They've got fine jewelry at Blue Nile, and their bench jewelers are going to handcraft the perfect ring for the perfect occasion. So make that moment sparkle with jewelry from BlueNile.com. And Locked On Sports listeners get $50 off purchases of $500 or more. This podcast exclusive includes engagement. Use code Locked On, code Locked On. And every order is insured, ships free, and arrives in discreet packaging that won't give away what's inside. Shop stress-free. Find your forever peace. Go to BlueNile.com today.
And on today's episode of the Ron Johnson Show, as I bring my producer in, Sam Ekstrom, it's going to be fun today because this is a topic I love. We're going to talk wide receivers in the NFC North, and we're going to rank them 1 to 4. And Sam, in your opinion, if you had to do a quick just mind jump of here's the top receivers in the NFC North as far as overall room, not player, because if we were to go player, and maybe we'll do that in another one or two, just ranking the NFC North receivers, mm-hmm. I would definitely go Justin Jefferson. That's a tough one after that. I'd say Justin Jefferson, maybe to Alan Lazard. Maybe
I think Adam Thielen is the number two receiver in the division. I legitimately probably think the Vikings have the two best, don't they? They have to.
I agree, because if you think about Alan Lazard, Sammy Watkins, Randall Cobb at the end of his career. Now, Jameson Williams, we don't know what he's going to be in the NFL. He was hurt in the championship game, and now he's back. But DJ Shark, you got Amon-Ra St. Brown. Bears are just whatever. Khalif Raymond and Quintez Cephas with the Lions. I would have to say Justin Jefferson and Thielen are 1 and 2, and then everybody else falls below. But then when you look at supporting cast, when you talk about Jameson Williams with the Lions, Amon-Ra St. Brown, DJ Shark, and Quintez Cephas with the Lions, that's four, like, kind of, you know, generally good. And then you got Randall Cobb, Christian Watson, Alan Lazard, Sammy Watkins, Amari Rodgers, and Romeo Dubs out of Nevada for the Packers. Again, a nice group with Aaron Rodgers. Of course, is going to make them better. You look at the Vikings right now, it feels kind of top heavy. You got Justin Jefferson, Adam Thielen. You got KJ Osborne, who would be somewhere in there with the like Quintez Cephas's of the league. Mm-hmm. And then that's it. We don't know what we have after that. Like, you don't know what you have with the Vikings. So I struggle to just automatically crown them number one. Like, I struggle. But if we're just going to say top two receivers of each group, yeah. The starters, yep, Vikings are one, in my opinion. I'd say, this is tough. I guess I'll have to say the proven Packers are two, because you got Lazard, Watkins, you got Randall Cobb, who's proven, and then you got Christian Watson, who's their first-round pick. Three would be the Lions. And then, of course, the very deficient N'Keal Harry, Darnell Mooney. They have Tajay Sharpe with the Bears, David Moore. I mean, I just feel like the Bears, I know they've tried to reach and get guys, but losing some of the guys they've had in the past, it just doesn't work for them. So that's where I'm going to go right now. I'm going to go Vikings, Packers, Lions, Bears. But the Packers, Lions, I mean, Jameson Williams, if he comes in and has a great rookie season, they might jump to number two. Now, that all depends on this offense, though, and we know that the better quarterback is in Green Bay over Detroit. But that's my four. What about you, Sam?
Yeah, so I remember PFF ranked the Packers 31st in wide receiver room. They do have a couple veterans, though. I think the Watkins
in front of the Bears, though, right,
is big.
The Bears were 32.
Were they 32? I can't remember. They might have been. The Bears losing Allen Robinson is so bad for. I mean, they weren't that deep to begin with, and I know Darnell Mooney is a really nice fifth round pick. That's a young receiver who might be around for a while. But their depth, and they did add N'Keal Harry, Ron. I don't know if that moves the needle for you, but they made a trade for N'Keal Harry. Again, I think when I look at these wide receiver rooms, I see a bunch of wide receiver three types. I see a lot like Cobb. He's a wide receiver three. Like most of the places he's been the number two or number three guy. This stage in his career, he's a number three guy. Watkins has always been a complimentary piece. Amon-Ra St. Brown. He's probably headed for bigger things, but he still strikes me as that number two, number three piece. There aren't a lot of aces on these rosters anymore. Allen Lazard, he was the number three guy last year on the Packers, or number four guy even. So when I see the Vikings with two stars and then a bunch of wide receiver by committee on the other groups, I still have to put the Vikings, and it's not like the Vikings don't have a wide receiver three. I'm very high on KJ Osborne. Seven touchdowns. 655 yards last year. So I think he's a bona fide three. And if you're comparing fours, I mean, sure. Do the Vikings have maybe a disadvantage at the wide receiver four? Sure. But when you have three strong, I'm okay with that. I mean, you're running 11 personnel most of the time anyway. Your fourth wide receiver isn't out there very much. So I love the Vikings in this battle by a long shot.
Yeah, and I will say that. That's where I was going with that. It's like, how big is that gap? I'd say the Vikings-Bears gap is huge. The Bears have no chance at being the number one core. The way their offense is set with their quarterback and those receivers, I just don't see it. They lost big when they lost Allen Robinson, and then Allen Robinson wanted them to bring in another receiver, and they just couldn't land one because there was conversations about another possible former Alabama receiver going to the Bears before, just could not make it work. You look at the Bears, you know, trying to make trades and talking to teams. And, you know, I know there was no way they were going to get a big name receiver, but they were trying to get some pieces to the puzzle. But again, when you look at that group, Darnell Mooney, N'Keal Harry, probably other two there with the Lions. I'm guessing if Jameson Williams is healthy, you'll have him and DJ Shark, or you'll start off with DJ Shark and Amon-Ra St. Brown with Jameson Williams working his way in there as he becomes a starter. And then with the Packers, you're probably looking at Allen Lazard and Sammy Watkins is my guess, with Randall Cobb being the three, but then Christian Watson eventually being the number one, you know, out the gate. I'm guessing, you know, Rodgers is going to want veterans. We've always heard the stories of how Brett Favre treated receivers that weren't, you know, top guys. We heard about how Aaron Rodgers does it as well. And so if you think about that, those are guys that want to go into camp and go into those first couple games with guys that if I call a play out, you know what it is. If I call this, you know, check out, I need you to be where you're at. Aaron Rodgers, you know, the money he took this year, lost Davante Adams. It doesn't feel like he's going to come out and be all like kittens and bears and roses and happy. He's going to be trying to win some games. And so I don't think throwing a rookie out there with him right away is the way to go. But, yeah, the Vikings are head and shoulders right now. But again, yeah, the Packers, I mean, I don't – so this is the thing about PFF. When you rank the Packers 31st, I get it. You know, you're trying to – because they're trying to really hit on the fact that there's no more Davante Adams. But in my opinion, watching Christian Watson at North Dakota State, now again, it's competition, it's different competition out there, but I think he'll be, you know, just fine. You can't teach size. You can't teach speed. Like, size and speed are just two things people have. You can teach ability after that. You can teach route running. You can teach scheme. Christian Watson is no way in close to a Randy Moss. But if you think about that, that was the knock on Randy Moss being at Marshall. Like, can he do what he's doing at Marshall in the NFL? Well, yeah, the Vikings, thank God, took a chance and said, yep, I think he can. 20 other teams said, get out of Marshall. I don't know if he's that good. I don't know if Randy Moss is as good, because Marshall just doesn't play Florida State. They don't play Michigan and Ohio State. Like, if Randy Moss went to Notre Dame, he would have been the number one. If he stayed at Notre Dame, if he stayed at Florida State, because we know he was both places, and we've heard the Chris Winkie stories about, hey, coach, you Bobby Bowden, you got to get him on the field. He would have been the number one overall pick in the draft. Like, if he played at a Florida State like Pete Bowyer or Peter Warwick and did the things he did at receiver, at punt return, in that conference at the ACC, playing against Florida, playing in a big bowl game, playing in a possibly a national championship, he's the number one overall, you know, player taken in the draft. So Christian Watson, we can't try to tone it down because he went to North Dakota State. I think he's a good receiver. But, yeah, I'd say the Bears are for sure four. I'd say the Packers and Lions are fighting for two. And I say the Vikings are number one because, like you said, those top three are heavy. You got Justin Jefferson, you got Adam Thielen, and you got KJ Osborne, who's a very serviceable three. From there, that's it. Whoever wants to be the four, five, and six with the Vikings, we'll find out during training camp. But that's your four, your ranked four receivers. You guys let us know what you think. Like, comment. Please let us know. Locked On Sports Minnesota. This is the Ron Johnson Show. I'm Ron Johnson. That's Sam Ekstrom. And we'll be back. Kevin Seifert's coming up next. Kevin Seifert, we're going to ask him the hard-hitting questions. We're going to ask him who he thinks the best receiver in the NFC is, NFC North, and then also who's some ones and twos in the NFC North as well, and what can this season look like for Kevin O'Connell. Coming up next on the Ron Johnson Show. And now on the Ron Johnson Show, as promised, we have Kevin Seifert, insider for the Vikings, ESPN beat writer. You guys had Courtney Cronin earlier. You know who she is. She's now moved on to the team that sucks with the Bears. Sorry, just joking. They're okay. But we now have Kevin Seifert. He's a part of the championship mantra beginning of Kevin O'Connell. Kevin, welcome to the Ron Johnson Show. When you first walked onto campus and you start to kind of feel the aura, you know, like Dave Chappelle being Rick James, you felt the aura of Kevin O'Connell around the building. What does it feel like around the building, just being around that staff of Kwesi and Kevin O'Connell and these new coaches? What is the vibe like around there?
I guess the best way to put it is it feels like the temperature has been brought down considerably in the building, whether it's the football side, the business side. You know, I wasn't out there every day under the Zimmer Spielman regime, and you know, it's not unusual for people who work together for a long time to start grading on each other, and for that you know, sort of relationship to spur out throughout the building. And so, by all accounts, it was a pretty tense place. It was a pretty you know, joyless place there for a little while, and they very intentionally tried to create a different atmosphere, and they certainly hired two people. And I think Kwesi will have a lot to do with the culture as well as Kevin O'Connell. But they two people who are very different personalities from their predecessors. And so the immediate impact has been, you know, I think people are a little looser. I think people are feeling a little bit more empowered and more ownership in the direction of the franchise. And you know, you could say, well, that's what people always, you know, feel like in the beginning of a new regime. But I've been at places, and I'm sure Ron, you've seen this as well, where the opposite is true. They hire people to kind of lay down the law and create a quasi-military situation that scares people into playing well and coaching well and doing everything else well. And those don't usually turn out too well, I don't think. And so this is that's my impression, is that the temperature is lowered, it's a looser place. Ultimately it'll you know, the success or failure may or may not have anything to do with that you know, that sort of atmosphere, but that is certainly the first impression when you walk in the door or on the field.
Yeah, and the players. I mean, when you see them at practice now, you can kind of see from it's a different era. I mean, when I played, we didn't have social media. We didn't have a social media team. Now you can see even on social media the players' personalities maybe being a little bit more loose, guys having a little bit more fun at practice. And again, it like you said, it's different. You know, it's like going from McDonald's to Burger King. It's the same thing. It's just different. You know, if you eat McDonald's every single day and all of a sudden you're like, oh man, it's nothing's getting different. Nothing's better. And then you get Burger King, you're like, oh man, this is a little bit different, or Chick-fil-A, you know? So I think that's what it is. It's different. As this difference take place, because Kwesi said something to me that I thought was powerful. He said, yeah, we can change the culture, but does that equate to wins? What does that mean for Kevin O'Connell? And what can this team do from day one? Like, first game, preseason's done, they've made the roster. What can be different as far as equating wins on the field that maybe Mike Zimmer didn't truly understand when you think about the offense versus the defense standpoint of this team?
Yeah, and really that's what they've done, because when you look at the roster and you look at sort of the makeup of the team and the moves they made in the offseason, they didn't blow anything up. You know, they're basically – you know, there's some changes, but for the most part, it's the guys they had last year in the key positions that they're hoping can lead them. I'm sure you guys have talked a lot about that. And I think, that puts the pressure on the coach and the coaching staff. Like, that the implication is that with a different, you know, set of eyes and a different approach and a different, strategy, that's what will be the difference between an 8-9 team and a, 10-7 team, or 11-6 team, or what have you, that makes the playoffs. And so I think the big thing will be, can they sort of execute a shift in the identity of what makes the Vikings win? Because throughout the Zimmer era, no matter what the quarterback stats were, the idea was that defense and running game were going to be the things that led them to victory. That's how they built the teams. That's how they coached and call plays for the most part. And that, I don't think, is what, the general assumption that around the NFL about how you win is anymore. And so O'Connell sort of personifies the idea that, be aggressive passing early on. You're going to have a running game, but you're going to take advantage of all the NFL rules that are set up for you to be able to throw the ball, better than the defense can defend you on doing it. With the quarterback and the receivers they have and the running backs, out of the backfield that they have and the skill players, they're set up to be able to do that. And so what can he do, right out of the bat is set the tone and say, here, we're going to win. The Vikings are going to win because the offense is going to hold the ball and score a lot of points. And it sounds simple, but that was not very consistent over time in the sort of the last few years of the previous era. And so it doesn't sound complicated, and it's not. It's just a matter of can they make that shift early on in the season in order to hit the ground running.
Yeah, and I've talked to a few current players. I've talked to a few former players, and you hit the nail on the head with the offense. I mean, I've had players tell me they felt like the offense was second fiddle. We have players on record on TV saying, they didn't interact with Mike Zimmer because they were on the offensive side of the ball. Yeah. Like, hey, I haven't seen Mike Zimmer in, X amount of days. Like, I saw him at practice, but that's it. Like, I don't see him in the building. He doesn't come to my meetings. I think that is going to be a big different focus, where you're going to see Kevin O'Connell, of course, in all the offensive meetings, with the position groups of the offense, because that's his thing. Defensively, I think defensive guys don't care about their head coach being around. They know their job. We got to stop the other team. They don't need to be coddled, handheld. It's just a different mindset on defense than it is on offense. Defensive guys are assassins. Yeah. Offensive guys are prima donnas. It's different. And I was one. I know. I want coach to tell me I'm good. Like, come talk to me. Tell me what I need to do to get better.
Yeah.
So when you think about this offense, Kirk Cousins, Kevin O'Connell saw he's seen Kirk Cousins before, but he's seen Matthew Stafford operate. He's seen what a Super Bowl quarterback looks like. Kirk Cousins gets disrespected. He's the Rodney Dangerfield of the NFL, I feel like. If you think about Kirk Cousins, what does he need to do this season to get some respect? Like, what does he have to do to really say, you know what, I'm a good quarterback. My coach has never really trusted in me.
Whether it's fair or not, from a national reputation and even maybe locally to some extent, They'll either need to be, you know, they have that Monday night game in week two, where the whole country will be watching. I think it's week two against the Eagles, where the whole country will be watching. And we all know what the narrative is with him in primetime games. If they end up being in a lot of close games, how does he play in the fourth quarter of those close games? Because we know that, he can make all the throws. We know that he can compile, some pretty good stats, and that he'll find the Justin Jeffersons and the Adam Thielens. He understands those are the guys that he needs to go to. But in those situations when you have a good quarterback and you want him to become great, those are the times that he needs to do that. When the entire country's watching him, and in close games, the other side of that is they need to maximize the good and not try to push him to be the great, if that makes sense. There are a lot of things that we've seen him do very well over the years, whether it's throwing to tight ends or running bootleg, like doing the bootleg passes, or operating in certain schemes that he's shown on tape against NFL defenses he can be very good at. So are they going to try to maximize those things, or are they going to try to push him into new directions in hopes of turning, like I said, what is already a good quarterback into a top 10 type guy? And so I don't know what the answer to that is. It sounds like, from what was being said in the spring, that they're going to, at least from adjustments and on the line standpoint, they're going to expect him to be a veteran, smart quarterback who can read the look and get the team into the right play. That has not always been the case, as he's talked about and other people have talked about. But those are the things that I'll be watching. The extent to which they put play calling and or play adjusting responsibilities on his shoulder on the field during games, and the extent to which he plays well in those crucial times that take you from good to great.
And last one for Kevin Seifert, ESPN Insider. There's some names on the market that have been tied to the Vikings that possibly could come back, because we know everybody now is just biding their time, waiting for that first week of training camp to see, one, who gets hurt? What's the salary cap situation look like? Are there other guys out there to get cut in the first early days? You got Anthony Barr, Dominican Sue, Linval Joseph put an Instagram video out at the Vikings facility, and then Kyle Rudolph. Of those four, who's most likely to be a Viking by week one or two?
Well, I guess part of it depends on are they really, how much are they going to be in this 3-4 defense? Because the Ndamukong Suh thing has been interesting, just because he's a big personality, but he's always been a three technique tackle. And, if you're wanting to turn him into a guy that you bring in passing situations when you go to four down linemen, then that makes sense. If you're planning to play him on first down and you're 3-4, I don't know if he's the nose tackle that you want there. That has not been what he's done for a good part or all of his career. So I guess that name is interesting if they wanted to use him as a kind of a guy to bring off the bench in passing situations. Linval Joseph, being the straight nose tackle, if Dalvin Tomlinson is healthy, I'm not sure that I see that. So, the Sue thing is interesting to me, and I think that's one to keep an eye on, especially as we see how the scheme actually evolves. Teams are very rarely in their base defense from a percentage standpoint, and so even if they're saying they're playing a 3-4 and they are playing a 3-4, I don't know how often they'll be in that alignment.
Mm-hmm. And then what about Kyle Rudolph or Anthony Barr?
I think it sounded like the Barr thing has moved on, unless something has changed this summer. They, from a physical standpoint and also just the scheme standpoint, I'm not sure if this regime saw fit. I know Kwesi has talked to him and there's a personal mutual respect there, but in terms of whether there's a fit on the field, I don't know that that's the case. And Kyle Rudolph, it makes a lot of sense. I think they want to give Irv Smith as wide of a runway as they can give him to be as dominant a three down tight end as he can be. Potentially once you get to training camp and you see what the depth is behind him, that's a possibility. But that's probably another one where I don't know that there's any urgency, and it might require some kind of injury for that to happen.
Well, appreciate you, Kevin O'Connell. Kevin Seifert. Like you're saying that Dominican Sue is one then. So hopefully, you know, if we can figure that out, Dominican Sue is a big name, a big personality. Yeah. We know he's fearless. We know he brings an attitude to the defense too. So maybe that's something to keep an eye on. But I want to thank Kevin Seifert for joining me on the Ron Johnson Show. Up next, we got the Daily Three. That's three questions, 3 minutes each. Stay tuned.
All right, let me tell you about the Dave app. When you're a little tight on cash, I remember being paycheck to paycheck when I was interning for free. I was working at a gas station. I could barely get home to see my parents and ask them for more money. I needed to borrow money to put gas in my tank so that I could drive and borrow more money. It was a bad situation. But you know what? The Dave app can help you get up to $500 instantly with extra cash. That's more money to fill your tank, buy a wedding gift, catch up on bills, whatever you need. Tackle those expenses that have been stressing you out with any hangups there or without any hangups. There's no interest and no credit check needed. Millions of people have already downloaded the Dave app to get the financial relief they need with extra cash. So if you're in a pinch, like I was when I was an intern 10 years ago and need some extra help, download Dave and think of it as a helping hand from future you. Download the Dave app from the App Store right now. That's D-A-V-E. Sign up for an extra cash account and get up to $500 instantly. For terms and conditions, go to dave.com/legal. Instant transfer fees apply. Banking provided by Evolve, member FDIC.
Now it's time for the Daily Three. That's three questions, 3 minutes each. Sam Ekstrom, take it away.
Thanks, Ron. In the latest ESPN poll where they grade the receivers, votes from coaches, executives, players, scouts, they've got Ja'Marr Chase as the number three receiver in football. They've got Justin Jefferson as number four. I think Adams was one, Kupp was two. So we've really digested all of these rankings over the last few weeks, and very few of them actually have Chase above Jefferson. That really caught my eye. What do you think about that poll, Ron, with Chase three, Jefferson four?
Well, I mean, honestly, let's be real. Ja'Marr Chase is a ridiculous athlete. Like, the things he does, it's head and shoulders above a lot of other players in the league. Justin Jefferson as well, Cooper Kupp, and then Davante Adams. I think those four have kind of put themselves out in front. We got, you know, DeAndre Hopkins, I think, is right up in there as well. You could say CeeDee Lamb is not too far behind. But here's the thing with Ja'Marr Chase and Justin Jefferson. They're different type of route runners. Ja'Marr Chase is a little bit more violent with some of his routes. Justin Jefferson's a little bit more like he's smooth with it. And so I think this year you're going to see it. So you saw Ja'Marr Chase in an offense that was extremely well thought out by Zach Taylor. You saw an offense that was extremely predicated on certain coverages, changing routes, quarterback receiver being on the same page. The Vikings offense sometimes just seemed like it wasn't that consistent. And Kevin Seifert pointed that out earlier in the interview. It just wasn't like, hey, this is what we need to do. We're going to win the games because of the offense. It was always a defensive mindset, and if the defense wasn't number one, it felt like the team wasn't happy. Like, they could get torched on defense, win a game on offense, and Kirk Cousins had to fight with the coach to celebrate. Like, it just always felt that way. Like, there was never happiness when the offense succeeded and the defense failed. So when you look at that from this offensive standpoint now, Justin Jefferson has a coach that's going to pour into him. He's going to help him out with different route schemes. He's going to give him choice routes. That's where I think Justin Jefferson can kind of jump back up and be in that number two conversation, number two receiver in the NFL. But when you're talking about Cooper Kupp, Davante Adams, it's and Ja'Marr Chase, it's hard to really just pick a one. So if that's what the execs say, they're the guys looking at the film all day, every day. They're the guys asking other players. I'm going to trust that they have, like, if it's PFF, I might question a little bit because they go off of, like, what happens in the play. These execs are just looking at routes. They're looking at body types. They're talking to coaches. They're talking to players. You know, they're talking to the scouts. Like, at that point, like, I'm going to trust that they know why they're saying what they're saying. And so I'm going to say that's fine. I mean, I think this season is going to play out. We'll see of those four. But it's going to be a fun season to see what those four do.
Yeah, it's going to be fun to watch Chase and Jefferson vie for that top receiver status for many years. Because I think they're going to be – at some point, probably one and two. Chase had a better rookie year than Jefferson, stat-wise. I mean, Jefferson, yeah. I think broke the NFL record, and Chase beat it. So it's going to be awesome to see what kind of leap he takes in year two. The Open Championship, Ron, it's no longer the British Open. It's the Open. It's in Scotland at famous St. Andrews. And here's the latest. A lot of America is not even woken up yet. Tiger Woods is 11 shots back. The leader is minus 8. Tiger Woods has already double bogeyed and bogeyed. He's plus 3. So he's 11 back, and the day is barely started. Is Tiger Woods even going to make the cut? Is this going to be another sad, kind of deflating performance for Tiger?
Well, the one thing about the cut, we know it's on the curve. So can these guys keep shooting at the clip they're shooting at to push the lead out there? You know, maybe. Like, maybe the weather is working for him. Maybe the conditions fit. Tiger Woods might – he probably won't make the cut. Like, if you're already 11 shots back this early – now, again, it's early, though. He's only – like you said, it's only early into the round. So, golf is one of those things, like any other sport, you can get hot. Like, you can – like, Steph Curry, I think, went 0 for whatever in the first half of a game and then came back and scored 30 in the second half. 0 for on threes, not – points, period, but for threes, and then comes back in second half. But he's also gone games where I think Steph Curry finished one game like 1 for 17 from three. So great players do have that. The difference is Steph Curry and Tiger Woods. Steph Curry is still in his prime. Tiger Woods is probably on the backside of his career. So can he turn it around and birdie this thing to make it competitive and get fans interested in Tiger Woods? Maybe, but likely probably not, because golf becomes mental. Like, if you're all of a sudden aiming too far left and then you think you need to fix it by aiming right and then you go too far right, it's just it's like a kicker says. It's sometimes it's just in your head, and if the club's not hitting the ball the right spot, the right way, the right timing, it's just off. And then all of a sudden you're second guessing every swing, you're second guessing every next shot. You're not playing the way you would. Like Tiger Woods would attack pins. Now he's, you know, maybe say, let me just get on the green somewhere and try to make a putt and two putt this for par. If that's the case and he's not really attacking the pins, I don't see him making the cut.
Yeah, I just don't think that the weather in Scotland is conducive to Tiger's body. Like, Tiger is so takes so much effort just to get loose. He's got the back issues. Now he's got the leg issues. It's so hard for him to be limber enough to play competitive golf. And when you've got to cope with 20, 25 mile an hour winds and it's chilly, I don't know if he can be loose enough to play at a high level. I know he's won in this course twice before, but it's a hilly walk. I mean, it's flat, but you've got to walk around these like undulations for 72 holes for a full tournament. That's just a lot on his body, and to have to deal with the wind and the conditions in Scotland, I don't think he's going to put up much of a fight. 11 back, I know it's day one, but when you're chasing that kind of deficit, it's going to be tough for him to make that up. Now, from the looks of it, he teed off at the wrong time today. He teed off late when the conditions were worse. The guys that got off the tee early are the ones who posted the good scores. So tomorrow, Tiger tees off early, maybe things will be different. Last question for you, Ron. This is kind of a different one. So the Twins played yesterday, and they won in dramatic fashion, a walk-off win against the Brewers. The game was streamed on YouTube exclusively, and this is something that baseball is doing now. They've got some games on Apple TV. They've got some games on YouTube. The NFL is going to have some games on Amazon Prime. Ron, 20, 30 years from now, do you see sports just being streamed exclusively, no more TV, no more NBC, no more Fox? Is it just going to be streaming rights?
Well, I mean, no, I don't see that. And I was trying to look up the score of that streaming game to see if it was even so the Twins got it 4-1, like you said. But here's the thing about this. I get it, but no. TV's never going away. Why? Because Jerry Bruckheimer and Dick Wolf, those guys make too many shows for TV to just go away for sports. Like, it's one of those things where the championships, the Super Bowl, all that stuff, like, those things have to be on TV. Like, they can't stream those, because if you do it that way, and this is the problem with America, so many people feel like this is the way to do it. Like, X is the way to do it. There's not a lot of people that have all the additional things. Like, I think we forget that there's households without computers. There's households without tablets. Like, we are blessed enough to be able to have those things. But if we start to become a world where we just think everybody has a tablet, everybody has a cell phone, everybody has a computer, like, I know there are schools where kids go home and they can't do homework until they're back at school if it's a computer need, or they have to go to the library to enter a project. Like, that's just not something people have. Like, people don't have that. And so if we're going to assume that they just have these things, that's going to be the problem. They can't stream the games if they don't have a computer. But some people have basic TVs that are cheap. You can get a nice 32-inch TV for $80 now. And they have just an antenna service. Then we're talking. Like, I can see that. That's going to stay on TV. If we get to a world where all of a sudden, internet's becoming a little bit more accessible and people are getting more internet TVs, and internet TV costs has gone down because a lot of those internet TVs and app TVs aren't all cheap. In that case, then yeah. And then if the apps become a platform where everybody can get them on every TV, because right now, if you get a certain TV, you have certain apps you can't get. But yeah, I do see it coming, like more games streamed. When it comes to baseball, when it comes to some of these basketball games, some of these hockey games, there's a long season. Football, I don't see it. 17 games. I think Yahoo, I know, is trying that with their deal. And I forgot the other company that was Amazon, was airing games overseas. So I could see those platforms, but no, I don't see it going strictly online, because that just would be a dumb marketing mistake, because TV and commercials are still huge.
Yeah, I mean, I think down the road, I think that you'll be able to just flip to Apple, flip to Netflix as easily as you do ABC or NBC now. So they all might sort of be in the same, like, package or what have you, or format. So it's going to be easier to access those things, but it's definitely trending that way. Maybe not going there exclusively.
Yeah, no, I can see it going that way. I know people want games on the go. People want it on their tablets. People are just, I mean, a lot of people are cutting the cord too. So I get that. Like, if that's a way, but I mean, before we do that, we got to make sure that we're not just, think about grandma and grandpa. They're not going to stream these games. we got to make sure the 80-year-old Vikings fan or the 80-year-old Twins fan still has a way to watch the game, which is, hey, they just want to turn on the tube, sit back in the lazy boy and watch the game. But that'll do it for the Ron Johnson Show today. I'm Ron Johnson. That's Sam Ekstrom. That was Kevin Seifert. We want to thank you guys for continued support. Download, subscribe, share us. This is the Locked On Sports Minnesota Podcast Network. And I'm Ron Johnson. This is the Ron Johnson Show. Have a great day.